What's going on, guys? Thanks for listening to episode 4 of the 10-Year Blue Belt Podcast. Unfortunately, we don't have an intro for you today, but we'll just dive right in with the recording. Cheers.
What was the... How do you pronounce the name of the fighter who quit on the stool?
Max Roskopf.
Cool, because that's probably something we should address, too.
Yeah, I was definitely going to talk about that.
Yeah, because honestly, I really don't get that situation. Like, because maybe it's a generational thing, but, like, I know my coach used to always tell us, like, dude, just, like, you know, if you're not feeling it, just go get knocked out.
Yeah.
He's like, but you don't quit on the stool. And I was amazed, like, because I thought Robert Drysdale handled that very well.
Yeah.
But he got a ton of shit for it.
Yeah, man. I mean, Drysdale's no joke. He's a high-class jiu-jitsu guy, but I'm also not a big quitting on the stool kind of guy. Like, I know from competing that, like, you go out there and sometimes your brain's not always in the right place, but you got to find a way to just, like, grit it out, you know? Like, that's what a fighter does.
Yeah. Oh, well, 100%. Well, and I think, too, if you're going to be successful as a fighter, like, or to be great as a fighter, if that's your job, then I think you need to have, like, an indomitable will that's just going to, no matter what, you're just thinking, I'm going to fucking win. And then it's my job as a corner to save you from yourself if you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm all for the corner being ready with the towel. You know what I mean? Like, as I don't believe in, you know, the corner just sort of letting him go out on his shield. Because if I see there's no way for him to win and he's just getting pummeled, then yeah, like, feel free to throw in the towel. Like, that, you know, I've seen a couple good examples of that in the past.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of bullshit this weekend. Like, he won that first round. I mean, he arguably lost the second round. Like, he was getting caught with some clean punches, but nothing that looked too heavy. And for him to sit there just because he's tired and say, like, he doesn't have it, I mean, it's kind of bullshit.
Exactly. I mean, and he was a, you know, 5-0 prospect coming in. I know there was a lot of chat about him. And, I mean, honestly, like, that just tells me you're not about it. You know, and I'm sure he could beat me up, but I think this was, probably, just too big of a step up too soon. And I would be amazed if the UFC kept him after this, you know, because they may say, like, listen, you know, you're not ready for it. You know, maybe we'll have you go on the contender or something.
I was thinking, yeah, maybe the contender series.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, like, I think fighters need to, there are a lot of back doors in the UFC now, and right now, because of all of, like, the travel issues that fighters are having, where, you know, we're probably going to see more people get signed just to fill out the card.
Yeah, for sure.
And, but I am a big proponent of grooming fighters, because, you know, it can be such a huge step to be fighting the very best in the world, that if they're not ready for it, then, you know, it's like, and not only are they going to, like, get, you know, they more likely get hurt, but it's like, that's, you know, mentally they may will. You know, we saw that, because he probably, I doubt he fought anybody in the past who was as good as his opponent there. And so it's like, you know, and when, you know, you, when you're checked like that, like, you know, he just showed that he wasn't ready.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of guys, I mean, 5-0 is, like, a hard record, I guess, to go into any, like, big organization, unless you're really fighting, like, athletic, top-tier guys that maybe don't have big names, like, on your way to signing to the UFC. But a lot of guys, man, like, no offense to a lot of people, they have padded fucking records, dude. Like, they literally just tomato can.
100%. And it's one of those things where, you know, I have never looked up this kid's record. I don't know who he's fought. But undefeated in MMA usually just means you haven't fought anybody.
You haven't fought, you know, anybody.
Exactly. Well, like, for instance, actually, do you know who's a good example of the opposite of that?
Yeah.
Was Chip Mirazapalli.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
I remember in his second fight, he was fighting a kid who was 8-3. But as a result, though Chip is a world champion at Muay Thai now, you know, in MMA, he was, you know, he had a record just over 500.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't fight any chumps. He always fought killers. And it's so, like, you know, there's definitely a time and a place to fight chumps. I know I fought them. But it's, you have to fight somebody real before going to the UFC, at least conventionally, you know, because you just don't know how they're going to perform against somebody at that level. And I see a lot of guys who just want to jump right to it. And, you know, we get mixed results that way. Occasionally, guys will rise to the occasion, but I feel like more often than not, they end up kind of falling short.
Yeah, a lot of people will wilt under the pressure. I mean, I honestly can't sit there and say that I could have gone into a UFC debut. I mean, granted, no audience, no crowd, nothing really much going on, and have fought a full three rounds. But I honestly think that that guy doesn't – he just doesn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? It's like, I am a full proponent of that doesn't mean he won't have it in the future. You know, yeah. That, you know, maybe this is something that could be cultivated. But I think every time you quit, that it just makes it so much easier to do it again. And I'm seeing, like, guys who, you know, fighters who I respect defending his decision. And, like, and honestly, and that's not going to help him grow, you know, because he's going to be like, well, I got away with it. You know what I mean? And it's just, yeah, it's a tough situation because I don't think he should have gone back out there. If he gets to the point where he's eventually done, then yeah, absolutely, the fight needed to stop there.
Yeah.
But as a fighter, he shouldn't have been mentally done. And, like, I know the sport's super intense, but that's why fighters need to be made of different stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually kind of surprised the people giving Drysdale shit. I mean, like, he came out and he said, listen, like, I know my fighter, I know my guy, my job is to keep him in that fight. And, like, I could understand if he was down two rounds, like, getting his ass kicked, but it was tied going into the third. He thought that maybe if he could get him down to the ground, he could potentially win, like, a split decision. So,
yeah, I mean, and the thing is, too, and this is why, like, the fighter, you know, really can't be a good judge of it, because your mind does weird things to you when you're in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been in corners where guys have won both, you know, like, two rounds, and we're going into the third, and they want to quit. And so usually, like, what my coach, Bill Mahoney, will always do that has worked great is that he'll often then shrink it down. You know, like, he'll just say, just get one takedown. That's all we need. Get the takedown, and if you can't, then we'll throw in the towel.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, we never need to, because usually once they're back in it, they're, you know, they're out of that panic headspace that got them to the point where they wanted to quit. But it's just tough. I mean, I thought Drysdale handled that perfectly. And obviously, he is a veteran in both jiu-jitsu and MMA. You know, he's been around forever. I think the only reason why there's kind of like, why this is even a story is because we actually heard this. Like, his conversations like that happen all the time.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we actually heard it in the corner because there is no audience. There's no, you know, it's like, they hear everything.
You get to really see, like, what people are made of, what corners are made of, man. You get to listen to everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's why I actually am kind of liking it with no crowd.
Because
I like hearing, like, what the coaches are saying. You know, and it just adds an extra element to it. The only time I kind of miss the crowd is during walkouts and when Bruce Buffer is making his announcement.
Yeah. I also thought it was really funny, the Calvin Kattar fight when he fought Jeremy Stevens, when Rob Font jumped into the empty stands and they were high five and pretending like they're fans in the stands. But the rest of this card, man, was actually pretty good. I think the Bobby Green Clay Guida fight was really interesting. It was nice to see Bobby Green actually win a decision.
Absolutely, and honestly too. And I you know, Clay Guida has been around forever. I was happy for that. You know, for him to put on the show he did. You know, I thought it was a valiant, you know, display on his part.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that was a great fight. I loved the Josh Emmett fight.
Yeah, man. Josh Emmett hits fucking hard, bro. I can't believe how hard this guy can throw a punch, man. It's absolutely incredible.
100%. And honestly, the only fight that I didn't really like on the card was the main event.
Yeah. It was kind of boring, man. I mean, Curtis came out talking a lot of shit, saying that he was going to go in there and finish Volkov and dominate him and do this and that. And I mean, you kind of saw him getting a little tired, like wilting under the pressure of Volkov not getting tired. You know, I think it's worse. it's easier for a fighter when you're this grinding type like Curtis Blaydes, when your opponents get tired, because then openings come up, you can submit people, you can TKO people, you can knock people out. But Volkov was there the whole time, so it was very interesting to see kind of how he responded in the fourth and the fifth. Ultimately, think that Volkov, like, I mean, we're talking Curtis Blaydes, a really, really talented wrestler in the heavyweight division. I think against other guys, he would have put up a better fight, but he just doesn't have what it takes to defend the takedown against a guy like Curtis.
I agree, and he's also not the type who's going to knock you out with a few strikes. So when he had his opportunities to kind of, you know, slam down the gas pedal, he just, you know, could, he just wasn't doing it. He was still throwing teeps and body kicks that just had very little on them in the fourth and fifth when he actually had moments where he could have arguably finished. And, unfortunately, that was one of those fights where, while I respect that Curtis Blaydes didn't really have to win, it just, you knew how the fight was going to go from the moment the first takedown happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Curtis is one of those guys that you never know what version of Curtis you're going to get in the octagon. Like, usually, we all know his strategy. It's just to grind you out, take you down, beat you up. And if he can catch you with a good combination like we did with Dos Santos, then he'll try to put you away on the feet. But I thought Volkov could have done a better job preparing for that fight. I mean, you know the takedown's going to be there, and it almost looked too easy for Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah, and then Volkov wasn't doing anything off of his back. Yeah. It almost seemed like he was hoping for a referee stand-up, which is just a terrible strategy. And, kind of is what it is. I mean, Volkov is complicit in making it a boring fight because I feel like it's not on Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes is doing what was working.
Yeah.
And then it's on Volkov to stop his game. And so, like, I've never been one of those guys who will fault the guy winning. Because Volkov definitely played his part. I mean, it's super easy to armchair quarterback, right? We're armchair quarterback here. What Volkov probably should have done is just, like, immediately once his, butt or back starts hitting the mat, start stiff-arming and working his way to the feet. Because that can be, that would be what I would have had him drill all camp. Because that could just be such a heartbreaking fight to be part of if you're not prepared for it. Like, I've seen, we have a fighter from our gym, Johnny Campbell. Like, he's had more than a few wins that came from simply when he got taken down, he pops right back up. He's impossible to hold down.
Yeah.
And that just gasses out the person going for the takedown. They're eating shots during it. Like, cause that was the other thing. Volkov wasn't even like striking at all. I mean, even just like trying to slice him up with elbows from their back can at least just like discourage him just sitting there.
Yeah. I mean,
Curtis Blaydes do something.
For sure. And he's a very tall fighter, like a very rangy, long fighter. And typically I actually find these people to be the most frustrating people to grapple with, it's so easy for them to like extend their legs, like pop up, frame, like try to get to the cage and then stand up and start working your striking. But you can really tell that there's a huge difference in levels between Volkov's takedown defense and working off his back and Curtis Blaydes' just overall top game in wrestling.
100%. I mean, I feel like what it really comes down to is that Volkov was a little too complacent. Like, because again, he wasn't doing anything off of his back.
Yeah.
And he had, there are plenty of options, even if he's not a great jiu-jitsu player, he could do things like push up, head, try to get up, even throwing strikes. I always think it's cheesy when, like, the guys will lead too heavily at throwing strikes for bottom.
Yeah.
But it's better than nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
And also, too, if you can be super aggressive, and I'm sorry to be that talk over you.
No, no worries.
If you can be aggressive with those can open up, jiu-jitsu moves. It can create a little space for you to, get up or do something. But instead, he was just sort of lying on his back, kind of holding Blaydes on top of him for most of the fight. And, it's like, that's no way to win.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, man. But a really good fight, speaking of fighting off your back, was the Jim Miller fight really impressed me, man. Because Roosevelt Roberts is a tough guy. He ended up beating Brock Weaver at one of the events about a month ago. And I think a lot of people, you kind of count the veteran out, hoping that the new guy comes in and beats him. But Jim went in there, man, and he looked fucking real good.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and how often do you see submissions from guard anymore?
Yeah, not very often at all, you actually.
Know. Yeah, I mean, and I know, I mean, you remember from last week, I had largely counted Jim Miller out of that.
Yeah, you did, man.
Like, yeah, it just looked like he was being served up. But dude, I was so impressed with his performance. He looked so good. And you know, and it's nice to see him putting together, you know, some wins, even on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah, man, 100%. I mean, just from the very beginning, you could see the fight was, like, just going his way. He's just so crafty, and I know that he's probably given up a little bit of size against a guy like Roberts, but a guy with that much experience on the ground is just, like, we talk about it all the time. Like, when you're training, not even just training, even competing, fighting against people that really just have, like, that much more experience than you do, you're, like, pretty much a fish in a shark tank.
Yeah, that definitely, well put.
Yeah. So there's always circumstances like that where the craftier guy is just going to beat you. I mean, even just training jiu-jitsu, like you're at the gym, I'm a young guy, I'm 25, and there's some black belts in the gym that are like at the end of their 40s, you know? And there's some days you get the better of them, but you know there's going to be that day where he just outcrafts you, you know? And,
And that's also where experience is going to come in, you know, because like there's nothing that Roberts could do to Miller that Miller hasn't seen 100 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, and so he just looked really composed. He was able to, you know, and, you know, when he saw the opening, he was able to capitalize on it. And that, you know, that could be really tricky to do when you don't have the experience that Jim Miller has. And I think he has over 30 UFC fights alone.
Man, he just made his 35th walk to the octagon. He just tied somebody. I think it was Donald Cerrone for most fights.
Yeah, exactly. That's absurd. Most guys don't even have 35 fights in their career.
Yeah,
let alone at the UFC.
Yeah.
You know, and so I feel like, especially when Jim Miller hasn't shown any of the signs of durability issues that some other veterans ultimately show, like the one that's really coming to mind is Matt Brown.
Yeah.
You know, he just can't take shots anymore. But so since Jim Miller still seems to be durable, you really can't count him out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the guy showed in the Guida fight, he still got some power in his hands, and alone from absolutely rocking Clay Guida with a right hand, he finished him on the ground after that. I think he lost a decision after that fight, but you can just tell he's still game. I mean, both him and his brother are both very talented guys, and I think they have a really good camp in New Jersey, I believe. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him racking up some more Ws before he calls it a career.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like that. I mean, you know, it's like, obviously there's no title run in his future, but I mean, he does make for a good, you know, a good gatekeeper in that, like, you know, into the top 15.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, obviously he's in the most stacked division in the UFC, or one of them. And so he's probably not going to get much better from that positionally in the rankings, but that's not a bad spot to be in. You know, and he's making some money, getting his hand raised. You know, I mean, that's a good career.
Yeah, for sure, man. He's not taking too much damage either. Next week's fights are pretty good, I would say. I mean, it's the last fight card. What am I saying? This weekend's fights coming up are pretty solid, but I think it's the last fight card before Flat Island. So we've got a gatekeeper card.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I am really excited for Hooker versus Poirier.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I mean, I'm definitely going with Dustin for it because I just feel like he's better than Hooker a little bit everywhere. But that said, I mean, you know, this could 100% be Hooker's moment.
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I thought that the fight against Paul Felder actually went Felder's way. I thought that it was a barn burner. It was really close, and it was probably one of the best fights I've seen in a long time at lightweight especially. But I think Hooker's game. I think the guy is he's durable. He's rangy. He's got a good ground game. Obviously, he's got very sharp hands, and he's training down with a lot of champions. And I think that this kind of mentality will also – rub off on him, you know, like you have Israel Adesanya, you got Alexander Volkanovsky, all these guys training out of the same gym. So I'd like to see how the influence around him is shaping his mindset and what kind of Dan Hooker we're going to see in the fight. Because Dustin Poirier is always game, right? It doesn't matter who he's fighting. He always has a fighting chance, and the guy's a really good power puncher.
Absolutely. And honestly, too, I mean, you know, he's coming off of, you know, has he fought since the Khabib fight?
Poirier? No, he hasn't fought since the Khabib fight.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so he's literally fresh off of being the number one contender. You know, it's like, and frankly, I wonder if that would do something to Dan Hooker to be fighting somebody at that level right now. But,
especially but yeah, after that war.
Exactly. It's definitely, I would say, Poirier's fight to lose. But like you said, Hooker's super game, right? This is a step up for him. But it'll, you know, but I do have a hard press time picturing him getting the jump on Dustin.
Yeah. I also kind of think that trying to work in some MMA math that Poirier really didn't take that much damage in the Khabib fight. If you watch it back, you know, like, of course, he was outclassed and ultimately submitted, but Hooker was getting beat up in that Felder fight. And I guess you kind of really have to see how much a person can recover after a 5-round war like that, you know? So Poirier on one end is coming out kind of fresh off of a loss to Khabib with a long layover, where Dan Hooker hasn't fought ultimately too long ago and could have some lingering injuries. And we see how it happens all the time. Like with Joanna Jerjecek, we saw with Stipe Miocic in the DC fight after he fought Francis Ngannou. So I'm just really curious to see if Dan Hooker can come in as fresh as Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going to play into it. And you know, but I think either way, it's just going to be a really fun fight. And it is a good fight card to lead into Fight Island.
100%. And I guess the only other fight, I guess, worthy of talking about that we've touched on before is Mike Perry and Mickey Gall.
Yeah, I mean, and so Mike Perry, still insists that his girlfriend is going to be a sole corner, which that sounds like a terrible idea, but, you know, but Mike Perry is going to be Mike Perry, so I do respect that.
Yeah.
And I definitely think it's going to come down to Mickey Gall. I mean, if Mickey Gall tries to strike with him, then he might get knocked out. But if he's able to hit the takedown, I mean, I have a hard time picturing Perry beating him.
Yeah. I mean, we even saw in the Donald Cerrone fight that, I mean, I think Mickey Gall, I would arguably say, has better jiu-jitsu than Donald Cerrone. And Cerrone submitted Mike Perry off of his back, you know? So even if Mickey Gall decided to just go in there, be a little conservative, even pull guard, which you don't see a lot, I could actually see him potentially submitting Mike Perry off of his back for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I agree with that. And if Perry just doesn't seem to be a super cerebral fighter.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a fight where if he's going to win, he needs to fight smart. And I just don't know if he's the guy to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we saw that he's fought really good wrestlers, like guys like Jake Ellenberger. I mean, granted, Ellenberger was on the downturn of his career. But, like, getting in close, you know that Mike Perry can land, like, short, hard punches and elbows or knees that are going to put you out. So I guess that's just one thing that Gall needs to worry about. But I'm going to lean towards Gall on this one. I think that he gets it done.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I would be wary about if I was in Gall's corner is he seems to be in that place where he's trying to, you know, sort of test out his kickboxing.
Yeah.
And that's just, I hate when I see people, you know, do that in fights. You know, I'd always prefer for guys to try to win with what they're good at.
Exactly.
Especially when you have a specialist like Mickey Gall. And so, if he tries to stand with Perry, then it could easily go south for him. But it should be a relatively easy night if he decides to lean on his jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, 100%. And then we come up, man, I'm fucking so pumped for Fight Island. Like, it's literally only 2 weeks away, and the first card has three title fights on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you can tell the UFC is pulling out all the stops for it.
Yeah.
And it'll just be interesting to see, you know, what they've put together. Do you know if they're going to have an audience there?
I'm almost positive that's not going to happen. I think that they're going to advertise it and they're going to push advertisements since it's going to be like the first big international card. But I'm almost positive there's no audience.
Yeah, that seems to be my understanding as well. Though it just still seems like kind of a weird move for the UFC to do.
Yeah.
They're still not going to have a gate, you know, because I would imagine it was not cheap to do that. And, you know, and I get they want to use it, you know, their international talent that's been struggling to get here. But, like, if you're going to keep hosting fights with no gate, I mean, why not just keep doing it at the Apex Center that's free. It doesn't cost them anything. It's their building.
Yeah, I guess. I think you never know how much money is really involved in companies like the UFC, like how much money these guys actually have lying around. And I think that ultimately they're going to get a lot of sponsorship money. You're going to see, like Dana White said it best, he's one of the only people that's actually putting out sporting events right now, besides Premier League soccer and whoever the hell is watching that shit.
Yeah, I do know baseball's back. Yeah. That's what I read somewhere, but I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah, so I'm saying it's like putting on actual events, like big events. It's only Dana, and I think that he's going to get a lot of advertising money out of this, and there's a lot of people sitting around at home, so I think that the pay-per-views are gonna sell for sure.
Oh, definitely. Oh, 100%. I mean, this is definitely a mega card, and so I'm really excited to see how it all turns out.
I mean, the undercard's fucking stacked, and it really just drives me insane that Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant is the first fight on the fucking main card.
Yeah, I agree. Paige is somebody who, you know, I mean, she's not bad, but you can tell she just gets the push because she's hot and people like watching her and she's famous.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, but I agree. I don't like, you know, seeing like, you know, people like Paige positioned over, I would say, more deserving talent either.
Yeah, man. I mean, the main event of the prelims is Volkan Ozdemir versus Yuri how do you pronounce it? Prochaya? I think he's like the Ryzen light heavyweight champion. The guy that they just signed out of Ryzen. He's super talented. Like, very interesting fight to just put on the first fight of the card just so you can kind of introduce up-and-coming talent to, like, everyday people watching on TV. And Volkan Ozdemir, like, most people who watch light heavyweight division know who he is. You know, fought Jones for the title, knocked out a who's who of fighters. So I just can't understand how Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant is the first fight on the main card.
Yeah, man. You know, and especially too, I mean, I think it would be logical for Paige to be on the free card. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you know, because she does have name recognition. She is a star. Maybe that'll get people to tune in. But, you know, but yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a weird move. And, you know, you don't really like seeing it. But it's what it is.
Yeah. How much do you know about Leonardo Santos?
I know very little.
Man, so this guy had a pretty large layoff. Like, his last fight before his last fight was in 2016 against Adriano Martins, but he holds wins over Efrain Escudero, Anthony Rocco Martin, and Kevin Lee, all in the UFC. He's undefeated, and his last fight was a knockout against Stevie Ray. So he's realistically undefeated in the UFC right now, one draw against Norman Park. But this he looks like a guy that I think if he really wants to be active could really challenge for the lightweight belt.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good resume.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Anthony Rocco Martin, tough as nails, 170. Kevin Lee, man, he knocked Kevin Lee out in the first round, so.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Kevin Lee, like, you know, he's a tough night's work for anybody.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely a huge win for him to have.
100%. I mean, like you said, Kevin Lee super tough. Anthony Rocco Martin super tough. I think Leonardo Santos is one of the dark horses of the lightweight division, and he's fighting Roman Bogatov, a guy that I know nothing about. But I'm really actually excited to see this fight, and I think Leonardo Santos puts on another show. His last fight, I don't know if you recall seeing it, but he knocked Stevie Ray out and then ran out of the stadium.
Oh, I do remember that. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he knocked Stevie Ray out with that big right hand and just ran out of the stadium. That's Leonardo Santos.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, and I think that's a testament, too, to how stacked 155 is.
Yeah.
That someone like that isn't a huge contender already. You know,
absolutely.
You see these divisions where a few big wins will propel you, like, right to the top. But you have to do a lot of work at 155 to really get anywhere.
Yeah, it's really true. And then, like, the gap between everybody in the top five is extremely slim, you know? Like, there's not a lot of traits separating them to really being champion, you know?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and I feel like the top 10 at any given time is pretty interchangeable at 155. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you said, that is such a thin gap, especially when you compare it to divisions like, you know, any of the women's divisions or
light heavyweight.
Yeah, where John Jones and everybody else.
Yeah. He's actually cleaned that fucking division now. But we got Peter Yan and Jose Aldo for the bantamweight vacant title.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I mean, I would love to see Aldo get a W just because that would be huge for his legacy. And I mean, how can you not like Aldo? But I'm struggling to picture Peter Yan losing it.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Peter Yan fought like an old Uriah Faber and like Uriah Faber and Jose Aldo fought in like the prime of their careers, and Aldo did put a beating on him. But what Peter Yan did to Uriah Faber in that fight was actually downright outrageous. Like, embarrassed Uriah Faber, like outclassed him in a way that I haven't seen Uriah Faber outclass in a very long time.
Exactly. And I mean, and Aldo is one of those people too where I do question his durability at this point in his career. And so I just don't know how much he can take anymore.
Yeah.
And so I mean, like I said, I think, you know, because Aldo was the man, you know, for much of my time in the sport.
Yeah, 100%.
Since I started following it. But, you know, so I would love to see him get another W, especially since he's probably only a couple fights away from, you know, driving off in the sunset. But I just struggle to picture it.
Yeah, I also struggle to see. I also think that that fight against Marlon Moraes, Jose Aldo Moraes, that had Aldo been on the connecting end of some of those punches Moraes was throwing, that he could have put the lights out. I think Aldo is big for 135, obviously, because he's big for 145. So imagine what he's like at 135. You have to really see the difference between Peter Yan's speed and technique and just the overall size of Aldo in this fight.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, and obviously too, Aldo's an immense talent. And so, you know, we'll sort of see how it goes. You know, I mean, he has good boxing, but yeah. I mean, so does Yan.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, I'm definitely excited to see it, even though it does seem to be one where the outcome seems to be pretty clear.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we've got the featherweight title rematch, Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway. This is, in my opinion, the most intriguing matchup on the card because I just really want to see how Max Holloway bounces back after that loss against Volko in the first fight.
Me too. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he's come up with anything new to offer Volkanovski. Because I do think if he has it, if he tries fighting him the same way, then we'll probably see the same result.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, Holloway is obviously one of the best in the business. And so I have to assume that he'll come in with a different tactic. And I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I actually think it's either going to be that closed razor cut decision we saw last time, or I'm expecting, hopefully, a real masterclass performance from Max Holloway in this fight. Like, I want to see him come back hungry and really fight back for that belt.
Me too, you know, because I'm a huge Max fan. I would love to see him get the win. And so I'm hoping that he's made the adjustments he needs to and really able to put one over on him.
100%. And then the main event, I think a lot of people are discrediting this fight a lot because they want to see names like McGregor and Jorge Masvidal and people like that. But I think for the hardcore fans that really enjoy watching MMA, it's a super fucking awesome matchup. Kamaru Usman, the champion, versus Gilbert Burns at welterweight.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's I think Usman still isn't super popular with the fans just yet. And that's probably why we haven't been, you know, hearing a whole lot about this. But, I think it's going to be a great fight. I mean, obviously, Burns has had an incredible performance against Tyron Woodley. And it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, how he's able to ride that momentum into the fight with Usman. And so, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. And honestly, I'm having a tough time sort of predicting how it's going to go.
Yeah, me too, because I know that Kamaru's definitely the busier fighter than Tyron. Tyron's kind of like a sit back, calm, explode when he needs to, try to catch you with something big. Kamaru's obviously the busier fighter. He's in your face. He's throwing teeps. He's throwing leg kicks. He's trying to connect with punches on you. So, I mean, Gilbert, we know how Gilbert fights. Like, if it's on the feet, he's throwing leather, and if it's on the ground, he's the jiu-jitsu world champion. So, I think it's styles make fights. Kamaru's, it's going to be, I kind of almost seeing it going the Colby Covington fight, where both guys are so good on the ground, where Usman doesn't want to risk taking Burns down and getting caught in anything ridiculous, where the two are really just going to duke it out on the feet. And whoever's the crisper striker, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that said, I think Burns is a better striker than Colby Covington is. And, I mean, and Colby Covington had his moment in that fight. And so I think it'll be tougher to just stand with Burns like he was with Covington. And but that said, Usman does put on a lot of pressure, and he has a great gas tank.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and honestly, if I were him, I'd probably be wanting to have Usman kind of back Burns up against the fence, and but then keep him there and, like, just, you know, pepper him up with strikes rather than necessarily committing to the takedown, because it's like, obviously Usman's a, you know, gifted wrestler. Burns is, like you said, a jiu-jitsu world champion.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much you necessarily want to test it out on the canvas, but if he can keep Burns back against the fence and then, you know, and then really use that as an opportunity to set up his strikes, and while, you know, really applying that pressure, then I think that would be a good path for Usman to take, because I think that could lead to him getting the W.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you've kind of seen Usman take this, like, John Jones approach, you know, very lengthy, like a lot of teeps, like a lot of oblique kicks, like throwing a lot of jabs and switching stances and stuff like that. And I agree with you. I think that if he can push Gilbert up against the fence and just use his range to where he's out of danger and not really forced to take down and kind of just pick him apart for five rounds, I could see the fight going this way. But I'm pulling for Gilbert Burns in this one. I love the guy. I think at 170 he looks fucking awesome, and I hope he pulls it out.
And I'm with you there. I mean, admittedly, just as a fan, Usman just hasn't resonated much with me.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't have anything against him, but just, like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just not a huge fan.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I'm hoping Burns takes it too. But yeah, it'll be a really fun fight. And like you said, it's definitely one that's more for, you know, I don't really like saying the hardcores.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, like, one that the casuals aren't really going to go crazy about.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think for now, it's a good main event. We're going to see some good fights this week. Super excited. We'll talk about it next week. Calvin Kattar headlining against Danny Hodge. Other than that, man, how's everything going on your end? How's the gym going?
It's going great. I mean, obviously with the COVID regulations, that's made things a bit tougher, but you know, but like our pros are still able to get training in because they are allowing professional sports training. And so that's been good.
Cool.
And and so it's, you know, I'm definitely excited for all the regulations to be lifted and all that nonsense. It seems like everyone's just sort of over COVID at this point.
Yeah. Is Charlie pushing for, is it phase three that's coming up?
I think, I don't even really know. I think, because I've heard that martial arts schools specifically won't be able to open at full capacity until, like, phase four.
Jesus Christ, man. They're fucking killing you guys.
Dude, absolutely. And so it's kind of like, I know there are gyms already that haven't survived.
Yeah.
And so, it'll be, I don't want to say it'll be interesting, but I mean, but you know, I just don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, for a lot of people, this has definitely exposed a lot of vulnerability in businesses.
Yeah.
And I mean, and frankly, too, as you know, the industry as a whole is not one that can really thrive in a pandemic. You know what I mean?
For
and
sure.
A lot of these gyms have raised their thin profit margins, and so it's tough to be going. I mean, at this point, we're going 4 months without being open or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it's tough. But I mean, you know, everyone's sort of doing the best they can to make it work. How are things over in Germany?
Yeah, man. I mean, I finally started going to like the fitness studio this week. No issues. Don't have to wear a mask at the gym. Obviously, they've moved things around so that like there's the warranted 2 meters of space in between individuals. They've shut down some machines. They've got people in there kind of doing a count of how many people are actually in the gym, because I think they have a certain quota of like they have a max peak of people that are allowed to be in the gym at any given time. But other than that, it's fine. And then I've been talking to the jiu-jitsu trainers around here, and I guess they're allowed to host martial arts trainings, but it's only 10 people per class, not including the trainers.
Well, I mean, granted, that's definitely better than it is over here.
For sure.
But that's still a tough position, because I mean, like I said, a lot of these gyms just don't have like a deep profit margin. So like they need to be, able to go. I mean, obviously there are some gyms that have pretty deep pockets. And they'll definitely be fine. But I mean, it's definitely been forcing a lot of business owners to get creative in how they run things.
For sure.
Like. You know, like I know LaVon MMA over here is killing it doing outdoor classes.
Yeah.
That seem to be doing well. But the gyms that aren't able to pivot, you know, those are the ones that are going to suffer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, really sad time for martial arts gyms everywhere. And I just really hope everyone can pull through.
Me too.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in to episode 4 of the podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed. Stay tuned for next week, and cheers.